As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Be the best and you got to pay a little price. If you want it bad enough, you got to do a little extra things to get it.
Welcome to the 11 Personnel Podcast, your favorite Rams podcast. I'm your host, Jordan Rodriguez, and with me this week, fabulous guest co-host, Stu Jackson of therams.com. Stu? How we doing?
You know, Jordan, it was a more eventful Tuesday morning than I think I anticipated, maybe even you anticipated, but nonetheless, it's quite the start to week six, and excited to be back on and covering that and all other news and observations from recent happenings.
Yeah, so we are recording this on Tuesday early afternoon. Obviously, Tuesday morning, the Rams traded receiver Van Jefferson to the Atlanta Falcons. Atlanta is getting a 2025 seventh round pick and Van Jefferson. The Rams are getting back a 2025 sixth round pick. Kind of one of those, we'll get into the why of it, but basically all of this started unfolding very quickly. I initially reported this morning that the Rams were seeking a trade. Usually when that comes out, it is either A, about to happen, and so everyone's fine with that information being out there because loose terms have already been agreed to, or B, the player they're trying to drum up trade interest, which that's not the case. As I had reported earlier, teams have been calling about Van since the spring. And so this was a confluence of different factors, but pretty much 28 minutes after I put that little live blog post out, the trade goes through. So this is the case where it was imminent. And so, yeah, kind of a crazy Tuesday morning. Want to start out first and foremost, and I know you echo this sentiment, Stu, because we've been here the whole time he's been here. Van Jefferson is an awesome person, and he was awesome to cover, super kind, really gracious with his time, always available. Even when like everything was falling down around the Rams last year, Van consistently showed up. He always made it a point to ask people, you know, personal questions about like how they were doing and what's going on in their lives. That's usually something that it just was so, it was just so normal interacting with him. It wasn't like media and player. He just was so welcoming of everybody around him and is, and I don't want to talk about him like he's just gone because he's gone from the team, but obviously, you know, he'll have some, have some new people and new faces to get to know in Atlanta. So I just want to say that the production wasn't there this year. For, again, we're going to talk about all of that, but I want to start with the human side of it first, because I am happy for him to go to a new situation to hopefully get some good tape out there in his contract year, because he was not going to have much opportunity to do that this year with the emergence of other players and the return of Cooper. And so this to me, you know, was, I think as a human being, first and foremost, like I'm happy for him, and I hope he and his family find kind of what they're looking for success wise in Atlanta. And you know, I don't think he listens to 11 Personnel, but if he does, just really wanted to thank Van for always being just really freaking awesome to cover.
Yeah, I'm really gonna miss him and his family. He was such a great dude to get to know from the time he got here all the way through. Obviously, his last remaining time with the team. I think back to, I think it was August when we were all standing around the podium outside at the practice facility. And I don't even think we were talking to Van. It was somebody else. It might've been like, Matthew Stafford or Aaron Donald or something, but he still, as he was walking off the practice field, came up to everybody and was, shaking every single reporter's hand, which I thought was really cool. And obviously speaks to kind of what you talked about with just the person he is. And so, certainly going to miss that dude, but I echo your sentiments too, that, especially with this being the final year of his rookie contract, I'm hoping this gives him the opportunity that he needs in such a crucial juncture in his career.
Yeah. And let's get into some factors behind this, because this is a multi-layered thing. It's actually also kind of simple. I mean, there's been some complicated exits from this team in the past, but this is not one of those complicated exits. This is nobody, including the Rams, expecting Puka Nacua to explode the way he has this early on. If they knew, they would not have drafted him in the fifth round. They would have used a much higher pick to take him. But his continued, it's not just that Puka has been on a steady learning curve. He's been on a spiked learning curve. It's steep for the positive. And his emergence, and then Cooper Kupp's return, and then clarity, and I think confidence as well in that hamstring situation. That's a factor into it. And then Tutu Atwell. I mean, the thing that is in vogue, and I've been talking to a bunch of people around the league about this, actually, the thing that is in vogue this year and probably next year too, until teams figure out how to stop it, is to have a motion man. This is you are a speed player. You have good hands. You're tough. You can get behind a defense. They just need to get you into space. We see the Dolphins do it. We see the 49ers do it. We see the Seahawks do it. We see so many teams doing this with specific players. And Tutu Atwell, not only did he really improve this last offseason, but he also has secured a specific role within this offense where he's going to be that player that they do a lot of those creative concepts. And he's also going to be the foundation point when they put wrinkles in those concepts. He's basically going to be the first guy to run the thing, and then other receivers will run the thing after he runs the thing, basically, to keep adjusting and evolving to teams. And so this is a three receiver team with very few substitutions. We've been saying this for years. This is Sean McVay does not like to substitute. They like to go tempo. They like to make everything look the same pre-snap with that 11 personnel and then change it up after the snap. They like to do a lot of the misdirection and all of those types of things. So this is going to be, this is a three receiver offense essentially, with some different iterations, Ben Skowronek and fullback or tight end, and definitely getting Tyler Higbee involved, those types of things. This is a three receiver offense. So if you already were kind of the odd man out, even when Cooper Kupp was not on the roster because of the emergence of other players. And again, a couple of tough drops for Van this season, but I think everybody knew what he is capable of and what his potential is. And so when you're already kind of the odd man out, it's basically like taking a card and putting it at the top of the pile, and then everything else goes down one rung, right? So then you're kind of, if you drop to the four, you're probably not going to get a lot of playing time. That plus, we know multiple things being true, the Rams are not going to extend him. So at a certain point, you have to figure out is now would be the right time ahead of the trade deadline to see what kind of return you can get for a player who also needs, I think doing right by the player, needs to get an opportunity to put some good tape out there in a contract year. I mean, two snaps on Sunday was kind of, the writing was kind of on the wall, in my opinion. And so those, all of those things I think are a factor. And I also see some angst about the trade return. I think objectively you could say no, that's not a high return for a player who was a second round pick. But also I don't know that you're necessarily factoring in compensatory picks the same way that you used to be with this team, because of the spending potential that they will have over the next, not just next season, but the next two seasons in free agency. I think that you start looking at how many late round picks you can accumulate in 2025, 2026, so that you can start bundling those to make up for what I think they're expecting to be a dearth of compensatory picks coming in because of what type of spending they'll be doing in free agency over the next couple of years. To me, it's a little bit of foreshadowing. Now, I could be wrong, but this sort of, kind of reading the tea leaves, as you know, we've done for years with this team, like that seems sort of like the direction. It's like sort of foreshadowing the direction they're about to take in terms of no longer relying so heavily upon those compensatories, specifically finding other ways to bundle and move up to get those different pick points by getting a bunch of picks in later rounds to have the option if necessary, but also kind of foreshadowing what the future spending over the next two seasons could look like for this group. Aging stars on the roster, you're going to have to replace the stars at some point with other stars. You know, we're talking about a 2-year thing here, and the Rams could be really aggressive early. But that doesn't mean they're just going to have one aggressive offseason. I think you're looking at a multi-year series of aggressive offseasons in order to eventually turn over not just the bottom of the roster, which they did this offseason, but also the middle and the top as well. At some point, it's going to happen. So all of these things kind of go into this. I do think you want more return for a second round pick receiver, but because of the way his role had decreased, I do think there's an element of wanting to do right by the player to help him get some tape. Like Sean McVay loves Van. Like, I think that there's an element of that to it, but then also your strategy is changing for your team build. So it's not necessarily the end of the world for them to not get, to not outweigh sort of the comp pick. And then to basically, and you've seen this a little bit with them in 2022 as well, to basically move players who they don't feel are necessarily going to be huge contributors for them. So you open that spot up for help elsewhere. All of those things are true at the same time, I think. So.
Yeah, I agree. I would also say too that, I mean, I saw some of the reaction about like, oh, well, why not, you know, keep him for depth and like potentially see if you can get a comp pick for him. It's like you just mentioned. I mean, I, especially with the way Sunday went, like, I don't think there was going to be an opportunity for him or as many opportunities as he probably would have wanted for him to continue to show what he can do. And so like, and obviously if you're trying to get as high of a comp pick as possible, I think the formula, if I'm not mistaken, I mean, part of that is the deal the player gets in free agency. Mm-hmm. It didn't seem like there was going to be much of an opportunity for him to, at least with the Rams, to be able to, you know, be in position to, you know, earn that deal and in turn earn
right,
them
that's a good point, the
compensatory pick that maybe they hoped or wanted, or that, or even just a compensatory pick in general. And so ultimately it's going to be, I think it works out best for both sides. It's like you said, because from a draft pick standpoint, it's good for the Rams because it continues to stockpile some of those picks, because they also did a pick swap in the, I believe it was the trade with the Vikings, right? Involving Cam Akers.
Yeah, with Akers. Yeah.
And so, yeah, I mean, again, tough situation for Van, but ultimately I think it'll better position him to hopefully have the success that he wants, again, heading into what will be, a year of free agency since he's on the last year of that rookie deal. And it'll also just position the Rams to be able to, you know, move on and focus on the group they've got.
Yes, Stu, you brought up such a good point. And so I'm going to just reiterate it here. Like, I get it with the comp stuff. Like, you, those are super valuable. Those are super helpful, right? But like, it's almost like you can't mourn a compensatory pick that never would have existed if he stayed on your roster, because exactly, he wasn't going to get reps unless, barring a catastrophe, which they can't operate as if a just in case mode with their receivers. I mean, anything could happen. As Kyle Shanahan says, we might not even be here Sunday. But like, the thing is you can't run your team that way. They need immediate help elsewhere and they need that roster spot. And so the other part of this is he wouldn't have, if you're buried and you're getting two snaps and no looks every single game, that tanks your future contract potential, which means that the comp pick, it also would tank the future comp pick potential. So the only way that this comp pick now would even exist in a tangible form is if he got reps. He wasn't going to get reps. Now he's going to get reps in Atlanta, which could increase his contract value, which everyone will be mad about because then he'll have the comp pick. But it wasn't even going to exist in its in that form if he were to stay with the Rams, is what it's a really good point that you bring up. And it's like, I kind of went galaxy brain there for a minute thinking about tangible and intangible comp picks and like what is real and what's not real. So it's like, as Creed from The Office says, you're not real, man.
Yeah, that's a good point. And the other thing I would say too is like, again, I know a lot has been made, at least again with the Cam Akers trade and now the Van Jefferson trade with that return. But comp picks are designated from rounds 3 through 7. And so who knows, depending on how things go in 2024, maybe that sixth round pick you get ends up maybe being slightly higher in terms of, you know, the slotting than whatever the, you know, compensatory pick would have been, you know, had it been like just hypothetically like a sixth round pick or something.
Mm-hmm.
And so all things considered, like this was at least to me like a good way of being able to, like I said, like help Ben out and make sure you're positioning him in the best possible way to succeed while also at least trying to get something in return that, again, you can still use to help with, you know, some of those roster needs like you talked about in future years.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the 7-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
And so with that, like, I think we saw the future of what this Rams offense is going to look like. Obviously, 14 points is dismal and can't be the norm in order to actually have any sort of success. But conceptually, we're going to talk purely conceptually here for a second, especially in that first half, you saw what, and really in the, on the scripted drive, like the first 20 plays always seemed to go really well, frankly, the script. Yeah. Love it. And so you saw conceptually like what the future will be. Puka Nacua, Cooper Kupp, and Tutu Atwell. A little sprinkling of Skowronek thrown in there. Some of that blocking stuff. Tyler Higbee, and then Kyron Williams and Ronnie Rivers. And so the way that they layered and utilized Puka and Cooper, I mean, it was so interesting to see. I mean, I had heard all week, and I reported this, like, Cooper is not expected to be limited. And Cooper himself is sort of like being coy about like, well, I don't know, we'll see what it looks like, which usually means some cool shit's coming. Yeah. usually that means something cool is about to occur. And so it was really, I think, for fans, and I could kind of hear this, you could kind of hear the ebbs and the swells when you're sitting up in the press in the press box. And fans were just, you could sort of hear the delight starting to grow of like, oh, he looks like Cooper, you know? And obviously it's a hamstring and you want to always have one eye on it. Cooper said, though, on Friday, I thought it was really interesting that the reason why he went on injured reserve was so that you have almost over the amount of time to return to performance so that you don't have to be worrying about this down the stretch. And I think that was really telling to me in terms of where he feels his body is at. Again, we'll see. We don't even know if any of us will be here Sunday, but you know, it was really telling to me that they were going to really open it up and see kind of like what he could do. You know, the first several throws, obviously that one bounced off Puka's hands, but Matthew Stafford found him on the 22 yard. And it was a vertical concept too. It was not even like a scheme open or anything. It was like, hey, Puka, go beat your man. And that to me was like quietly another step forward in seeing what Puka Nacua can do for this team, was, okay, you're not doing this. You're doing this right off the line. You're against a pretty, you know, solid corner. You are, you have to beat this man for a very low probability throw, by the way, to get a very low probability throw, which Stafford put it right on him. And so, to me, that was telling of the, they're opening up the book a little bit deeper. And you can do that obviously with Cooper Kupp here, but Stu, I'm curious, there was a couple of the like vintage Cooper Kupp moments. For me, it was the fourth down. I mean, we don't see a lot of fourth down tries from Sean McVay, but, but we did see vintage Cooper Kupp on that play. For you, what was it? What was the moment? You're like, oh yeah, this dude's back.
I mean, honestly, it was just the way that the first drive went. And again, I know, like you said, I mean, first drives are almost always scripted and whatnot, first 20, 25 plays, what have you. But like the fact that he basically caught all but one target on that drive and how in sync him and Stafford were, like, to me, I don't know if it was necessarily just one catch, but just the fact that the timing was there. From the jump. I mean, obviously there are a couple misses that have been well documented in the second half, but like for the most part, like he just looked like, as you know, Sean McVay likes to say, the Cooper Kupp that we all know. Mm-hmm. And so I was really impressed with just, I guess, the return to him truly looking at the return to performance level, as McVay and Dr. Neil Eltrosh like to say. And again, that first drive where they went to him early and often and he was taking advantage of those targets was the biggest tell for me, as far as just like what stood out about, I guess, him being back and him being obviously fully healthy.
Yeah, it was interesting. I think especially on the script, because again, when we say script, we mean like, for those of you who are longtime listeners, I've talked about this a lot, but if you are new, I'll explain it. It's planned out calls. So they plan it out. You have your A+ plan and you have sort of like, I've referred to it in the past as like a charcuterie board. Like you have all of the meats and cheeses and pickles and berries and jams and whatever all on a board and you pick how you want to put everything together. That's a script. And so after those plays, which again, there's like 20 to 25, depending on the opponent. Now you have to start free flying and like kind of adjusting and it's like a little more improv, right? Which is, I think, why sometimes it is so interesting to see the decline between first and second halves so far with this team, is because those are off script. You don't have your charcuterie board. You're like at the drive-through window at McDonald's and they're telling you the ice cream maker's broken. Like that's where you're at. So you have to figure out, what am I going to do now? You know? And so, For my guy who tracks my tortured food metaphors, there you go. That's the one for you. So it's like those, you could see what they've been thinking about and planning. And you could also see that, like, that's probably going to keep expanding, not necessarily on the script, but like have a stronger menu through the entire game of different things you can go to with both of them on the field and all three of them really on the field. So we're going to see this continue to evolve. Ted Wynn and I wrote a big story last week about what this looks like now and how it will keep evolving, over at theathletic.com. Hope you guys go check that out. But it's interesting because with those two players, and then also with Tutu, who can do pretty much anything and are so interchangeable in a lot of different spots, you almost have to, and you saw the Eagles defenders doing this, you have to basically like pick your poison, essentially, if you're a defender. You can not only schematically expand on the offensive side, but on the defensive side, you're like, okay, what one thing can I allow in order to prevent two more bad things from happening? And it's a smart way to play defense if you have prolific offensive players on the other side. You've seen the Rams do this a few different times with different players where you're like, okay, how can I contain Ja'Marr Chase, but keep him out of the end zone? I know I'm going to sacrifice a bunch of yards. Cody Alexander just wrote about this, actually. I know I'm going to sacrifice a bunch of yards to X player, but I'm going to keep him out of the end zone by playing this specific technique and these certain concepts that, yes, will pile up the yards in certain ways. But, or you could say like, that's just one example of a bunch of different things that they can do. So what I started noticing was, so these motions, Stu, you know, I'm obsessed with these motions. I think everyone on the Rams beat is getting annoyed with me asking about motions all the damn time. But there's this really interesting thing. They are running this thing I'm calling a ghost motion. It's not the real name. I don't care. I'm mad with power. It's like they're in a stack. Stu just did the mad with power. They're in a little stack or a bunch. It's either two or three receivers. And one of the receivers kind of swims underneath as a motion, swims underneath the cluster. And then kind of, it's almost like a screen. Screens are not allowed, or picks, like pick and roll. Like it's almost like that. They're not really allowed, but this is a way you can use the motion rules to get someone into space. Well, Tutu Atwell has been doing that. And I call it a ghost motion because it reminds me of a ghost pass rush where you're ducking under something, like in this case, the offensive lineman's arm. But the ghost motion, you're literally ducking underneath another player's concept, and you kind of get lost in the stack, and it gives you a free release. Well, if you're the Eagles, and they started doing this, if you're the Eagles, you're like, okay, I can give you that free release because this is what I'm going to sacrifice in order to prevent two other things on the two other bad things, right? So they start giving the Rams receivers, and specifically Cooper Kupp, on timing concepts between himself and Matthew Stafford, the long concepts that they missed a couple of those in the second half. The Eagles DBs, they started saying, okay, we're going to give you a clean release that you're hunting up off the line of scrimmage. We're going to make up for it and disrupt your timing in the early part of your route, early middle part of your route, like the early third of your route. We're going to do something, pull on the jersey, bump you a little bit, try to leverage you out of your step a little bit. You can see this. If you go back and you look at the all 22, which I was sort of like doing the red string whiteboard thing earlier this week.
Always Sunny in Philadelphia.
Again. Yeah, because I have no life. You see it. You see it happening. And it's like, it's really, really smart by the Eagles because you're picking a different spot to disrupt the timing play. You're picking a different spot to just throw off by like a half a second that timing. And you're also picking a spot where the ref is probably not going to see it. And so it's interesting because now, so they're aware that this happened. Like I talked to Matthew Stafford about this after the game. They're aware that this was happening. And usually it would happen with Tutu, but it's actually happening with Cooper as well. And it's not the only reason why those plays weren't connecting, but it is a reason on some of that. And so now it's like, well, okay, it's a way that defenses are evolving and adjusting to a play that's like pretty hard to stop. And it's like the pick your poison. You're like, I'm going to let you win the free release. And then I'm going to basically sacrifice that part of it in order to make up for two other, you know, to prevent two other bad things from happening in the play from being completed. I do think that refs will start calling it, you know, every team when someone adjusts different things, like every team they meet with the refs and all of that. The next thing is like our refs going to start calling it when they see it, because other teams across the league will watch the tape and they'll see it and they'll say, oh, Mike McDaniel, how can we start defending some of your motions that you use and some of your timing motions that you use? And like, so I think it's going to start getting called. It'll be interesting to see if it does or not. But then it's like, then you got to find something else. Now you got to find another way. But all of this rambling to say, the menu of what's possible expands. Defenses will have to make compromises like that in order to figure out ways to stop these types of concepts with so many different receivers. That's just one example. You're going to see brackets. You're going to see probably teams that are going to like split field coverage a little bit. You're going to see certain guys get manned up. I think it was really good that Puka put that catch on tape because he was like been known as like the zone receiver. Well, that was a one-on-one situation. And like, so you have to show that on tape to hold defenses accountable. It's just interesting. You're going to see so much. You're going to see the cat and mouse accelerate with all of these three receivers on the field.
the way these three receivers are getting used, or maybe it's just, again, because of the continued flashbacks I have to 2017 and 2018, reminds me a lot of what Sean was doing with Brandon Cooks, Robert Woods, and Cooper Kupp on the field. The only difference is, you know, Tutu Atwell is obviously a little bit smaller than Brandon Cooks, but conceptually it feels like, I mean, again, I think the motion is probably different, and I would say he's using it more than maybe he mm-hmm. did even with that trio of receivers during that time. But not so much to your point about what you were talking about with how that thing changes things schematically and conceptually, but just from a personnel standpoint, it gave defenses different things to think about, because Brandon Cooks and his speed could beat you deep. You obviously had Woods and Kupp, who, you know, could win those short and intermediate routes, but also could, you know, make those deep plays if you really needed to. And so I'm curious to see how this evolves and changes, kind of like what you and Ted mentioned and were writing about, because again, they've been really good about, you know, kind of being ahead. Cause I think you guys mentioned in the article, right, that like this was in response to the way defenses were already responding to something yeah. they had done before. And so, you know, the cycle keeps repeating, but, it's a neat little wrinkle that, you know, I think obviously the Dolphins are getting the most attention for because of Tyreek Hill and his super speed and the way that's, you know, changing the game, changing the math, especially for defenses. But, you know, the way they're using that motion now, it has been really, really cool to watch.
Yeah, it's just fun. It's fun to watch, objectively speaking. And again, like I've been sort of saying to people like, hey, remember when you guys didn't have any expectations on this team? And like, this is kind of one of those things where like, if you're a football fan, you can just sit back and enjoy it. You don't have to think about like, you know, wins, losses, because all of it's gravy. Like there was no expectation on this team from the outside. They certainly had expectations of themselves, which people looked at us like we were crazy for communicating those expectations. And it sounded crazy, I understand, but it was like, no, they really believed it. But it's interesting to see. I think that like what I'm still, and we'll get to this when we start talking about pluses and minuses, but you can see the potential in flashes, just like you can see spurts of complementary football and then total voids of complementary football. Like, I think they're one and the same. And I think the reason I understand why fans have been frustrated, even though, again, like all of this is just gravy. Like, this is a team that like most people did not even expect it. Like, they expected this team to not have any wins at this point and be giving up, you know, 40 points a game and all this stuff. And they're not. I think it's like 21 points a game, which should be enough for the offense to win games. But 21 points a game, I believe, someone fact check me if I'm wrong. And, it's like stuff like this is objectively cool to watch develop. And I think, and to my point, I understand why fans are frustrated, because you see what's possible. Like, they've showed you already, like what they're capable of if they, and I wrote this in my column, like they get out of their own way. And so with that, I want to talk about pluses and minuses. Maybe not so much from Sunday's game, because you can dig into all of that if you want over at The Athletic. And then Stu, I know you wrote about, you know, game recap, stuff like that. And, but I think overall we're, you know, 5 weeks in, some things that remain concern points, or some things that are sort of developing into, hey, this could be really real for them in a positive way down the stretch. And I don't want to put you on the spot, but I might start you off here with pick plus or minus, either way is fine. But what do you think some larger patterns that you're starting to see unfolding?
I think one of them is just some untimely self-inflicted mistakes, honestly, mm-hmm. which, at least the way I connect the dots, was part of the reason why, you know, Sean McVay, as you mentioned in your column, you know, kind of uncharacteristically voiced or kind of emoted his frustration by pounding on the lectern in his post-game press conference. Because the way he tested this team, especially in OTAs in the spring, and even more so in training camp, Like they have the mental fortitude to not be making these, or if they are making them, to move past them and correct them. And so while I guess it's a minus, I there's potential for it to be a plus, if that makes sense. Again, because this is, I know, something that you wrote about in detail, the way that the practices were structured and the way that, you know, he made sure that they were on, you know, on their P's and Q's and things like that. And so if they can get rid of those, or at least minimize them a little bit more, I think they'll have a better chance of reaching their full potential, because you and I have both seen how capable they are of competing, especially against the what I would say are the top two teams in the NFC right now. And obviously when what has the chance to be a top team in the AFC with the Bengals. And so if that can get fixed and on track, there's no reason why they can't, you know, I guess get over that proverbial hump, if you will, and, you know, turn some of those, you know, narrow losses against those upper echelon teams into some wins.
Yeah. This team is so close to have possibly being, you know, 4-1 or even 5-0, that I think that's why that they haven't been like blown out. I mean, the 49ers game, the score looks a little skewed, but it was not reflective of what the game actually looked like. This game looks a little like, wow, 14 points, who are those guys? But not reflective of what that first half looked like in terms of the way they were matching the Eagles. It's like the big minus for me is a lack of consistency from first half to second half. The big pattern that's concerning to me is mental errors in late clock situations by a defense that overall I think has held its own pretty well. Smaller minuses, smaller issues for me is, yes, the offense has to be sustaining drives. That's paramount. This is a group that this offense was supposed to carry this defense this year. And you kind of saw what happens when A, the offense can't sustain drives, and B, the defense is allowing too many third and longs. Again, those things are correctable. Like you said, this is not a defense that anymore wants to bend and not break. They don't want to break, but they don't want to bend quite so much either. That's been something that players do. I know you got an Akella Witherspoon story coming, man, and I'm excited to read it, but Stu, you've been asking about this, and I've been talking to guys about this all year too, is like they're more aggressive. They're playing more aggressive. Their concepts are much, their coverage concepts are much more aggressive. They're still, you know, playing that sort of masked pre-snap shell look, but the things that they're doing post-snap are more aggressive. You see them tighter, in their coverages. The gaffes though are things that are correctable. And those third and longs, it was like 7 of 10 third and longs. 10 of the 18 third down attempts were third and five or longer. 7 of those third and five or longer, the defense allowed conversions. So that can't happen. When your offense can't sustain drives, it compounds the problem when your defense is on the field too long. In a perfect scenario, the Rams sustain more drives, keep the ball out of the Eagles' hands. The Eagles are like, Eagles and 49ers, the best possession teams in football. And honestly, I'd give a little bit more to the Eagles because of what they're able to do in short yardage situations. Best possession teams in football. And so you can't be allowing those third and longs to a possession team when you have an advantage on the down. That's what a third and long is. You've created an advantage for yourself on the down to leverage your ability to get off the field. But when you allow those third and longs, it's totally moot at that point. And then on the other side, if you're an offense that you're throwing the ball three times fat, quick as hell, and getting off the field three and out, like you don't even have a chance against a possession team. So those are the things. And it's like, they don't have to be this way. And they don't want to, they don't feel like, I feel like they don't have to be this way. And that goes to your point where you can, like you can be a complementary team. You can have the ability to also be a possession team. We've seen it. They showed it to us. So it's kind of like, you know, guys, this is possible. And so that's to your point. It's like some of that stuff's fixable. So even the minuses kind of come with a silver lining. I think one that doesn't have as much of a silver lining at the moment. It's a little bit more granular, but it is a pattern, is they're not getting enough pressure. When they do get pressure, it is inconsistent. They have a couple singular talented pass rushers. Byron Young is going to be a really good player for them. Aaron Donald is Aaron Donald. But you can't singular, you have to rush as a unit. You can't singularly have success and make a difference impacting the quarterback. We saw that with Aaron Donald last year when everyone was hurt. We see that this year with Aaron Donald and Byron Young, having singular success, but not, the group is not rushing as a unit well or altogether consistently effectively. And now Bobby Brown goes on injured reserve, what's expected to be short-term injured reserve with a grade 3 MCL sprain. Now you're like, okay, so we're losing our people who can eat space to free up rushers. We don't have consistent pressure coming. So this is a spot where, yes, some players will continue developing and getting better. But if we're talking about, you know, trade deadline, if we're talking about all of these types of things, like those are two spots, interior and outside, where I do think, you know, yes, they want to hold on to capital. 2024 and 2025 are going to be the big spending years. We know that. But like, if you can find help there somehow, I think it's needed, because it's just not working what they're doing right now. And I'm going to read you guys this quote. Stu and I were on this call with Sean McVay. I asked Sean, are you satisfied with your defensive pressure through the first 5 weeks? And he says, I think that's case by case. I think there were some situations yesterday where, based on the intent of the rushes, got to give Philly and Jalen Hurts credit for being able to escape and extend some plays. Those third and longs didn't quite execute it exactly the way that the rush plan was intended. Said some positives, get off the grass on a third and 10. And then he said, there's so many layers to that question. As you and I both know, there's been some instances where we've rushed really well. Sometimes it's bringing four, sometimes it's bringing five. Some instances where we've got to keep the cup. So like the, you know, shell under cup game, you know, it's like, that's kind of the metaphor he's using. Got to keep the cup on the quarterback, especially over the last couple of weeks with guys that can extend plays. So basically he goes on to say they set themselves up to get the privilege to rush, as they always say. Like, they set themselves up in third and longs. They did that really well. Finishing the play, finishing the series with rushing as one, containing the quarterback, even if he can extend plays. Jalen Hurts is a remarkable athlete. They have not shown me the ability to be able to do that on a consistent basis. And I think that's a place of development and high potential with some of the young guys that they have. But if they are seriously thinking that they have a shot down the stretch, I would be really surprised if they're not at least talking about how they can either A, add some help, or B, continue to adjust schematically what they're doing in order to bring more of those exotic pressures, the blitz stuff, which again presents its own dangers. There's a lot of quarterbacks who are real good at beating those blitzes. But you know, it's just, to me, it's not enough just yet. And you really see it. You see spurts, but you don't see cohesiveness altogether as a group.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes.
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
I also think that that's one thing that comes into play, or it's a big factor, especially against those teams that really control possession well, or possession dominant teams, like you mentioned, like the Eagles and the 49ers. I mean, obviously, you know, they're those teams' offensive lines speak for themselves, but if you can't get pressure on them, like then it's going to be tough to obviously get them off the field and disrupt the timing and rhythm of obviously their respective passing attacks. And so as much as you can try to create and adjust, you know, the pressure packages that you're bringing and the different ways to scheme those up, ultimately, you need more than just a couple players to be mm-hmm. bringing that pressure in order for those to work. Again, whether it's, like I said, an adjustment or if it's something you're just coming up with.
Yeah, I agree. And this is going to be, we knew that this position group was going to be a work in progress. So we already knew that coming in. It's just you want to see consistency starting to form there. And if not, change has to happen, because if, you know, it's kind of like what they did last year where it's like, well, they weren't getting any pressure. So, and they didn't have any outside linebackers left. So they threw Michael Hoyt in there. Okay, well, is Michael Hoyt, yes, he can do some of the things you want him to do. Is he getting the type of pressure you need? He plays off Aaron Donald really well in terms of conceptually understanding where Aaron needs to be and what he needs to do. But in terms of the overall rush, is every player who is getting opportunities there right now, are they rushing in contribution to what you actually need from the group as a whole? So that's the big question here. And if not, what do you do to fix it? Whether it's adding somebody or whether it's changing up some of the packages that I think there's been some actually really creative pressure packages so far this year. And so it's like, do you continue down that road or do you try to get into a spot where you can do more with four? And in that case, you need to make a personnel change. And so that's kind of where they've got about 21 days to decide, 3 weeks to decide with the trade deadline coming up. And, you know, with this group, it wouldn't surprise me if they waited till 2024. It also would not surprise me if they said, hey, we actually are way better than anyone thought we would be. So let's start swinging now. None of that would surprise me. I think some of it's going to depend on, you know, what happens against the Cardinals. I think it's going to depend on what happens against Dallas, who looks vulnerable in spots, frankly. I think Sean McVay is going to have to send Kyle Shanahan a gift basket or something for putting up some good tape against certain opponents that the Rams are playing this year. It's like certain ideas, you know, like all that stuff that get on tape. But I do think, you know, they've got time. They've got a couple weeks to figure out really what their firm direction is going to be. And I think that's also the timeline of opportunity you're looking at for some of the players to take that next step in their development. Because Sean McVay basically said, yeah, like it's not consistent with where we know it can be. And so that's something to keep an eye on for sure. Stu, any more pluses or minuses before we get you out of here today?
I think from a plus standpoint, I've been going back and forth on whether I want to pick the run game or the pass blocking. I guess I'll just go with the run game. And then maybe if there's observations or insights you have about, you know, the way the pass protection has been, maybe you can chime in there. But at least just my eye test and what I see, it feels like it's been more efficient compared to at least the way it was last year. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that's just simply a product of more of the gap scheme concepts they're running. I know Kyren, at least from what I've seen on tape, he's been really great about being able to create something out of nothing at times when, you know, a lane seemingly closes, and he's been, you know, a big part in helping them stay ahead of the chains. But, you know, for an offense that is predicated on, you know, the marriage of the run and the pass, and, you know, obviously those run concepts being important to setting up some of those pass concepts, like that's something that I think has been a plus, even if it doesn't look like, again, some of the most earth-shattering run games in the NFL right now. To me, it's been enough for at least what the offense has needed to this point to be able to, you know, sustain drives for the most part. And like I said, stay on schedule and ahead of the sticks.
Yeah. What I don't like is I love the gap scheme stuff. I think it adds this physicality and they love it. The players love it. Kyren lights up talking about it. The linemen love it. It gives them an edge, some teeth that they just didn't have previously. And that's fine. They were a finesse blocking outside zone, white mid zone team. And now they're moving that identity. And that's fine. I would like to see more consistency in, even if it is not necessarily the most efficient call on your call sheet, if we're going by the logic that Sean McVay uses, which is he adheres to the feel and the flow of the game. I would say the feel and the flow of the game call for a little bit more running in the third quarter, like, because you are only down three and you have a chance to flip the script on, like, taking back what was taken from you right at the end of the game. Like, you can go out there and take it. It doesn't necessarily mean, even though passing the ball would be the quickest way to that point, distance between 2 points, players will all, and linemen and quarter, everyone will universally, everyone who plays the game will universally tell you that there is nothing that demoralizes a team, an opponent, more than those long, put together physical drives. And I think that they missed an opportunity to come out in the third quarter and say, hey, we're not scared of you. You know, yeah, you just gashed us pretty bad because we had a mental mistake there, 30 seconds left, but we're not afraid. You know, we are who we're telling you we are. I think if, again, I am a pass, like, I get, like, I'm an analytically minded, like, the pass is almost always more efficient, right? It's a passing league. It is the shortest distance, time distance between 2 points. However, what I'm saying is, if McVay is going to use this logic of the feel and the flow of the game, he can't then justify the lack of run pass balance in the third quarter down just three. So all I'm asking is the logic squares a little bit more. And so that's where I think, like, I agree with you. I think that they've got something here with this change in philosophy. It's not necessarily the most, you know, productive. They had a really great week last week, 164 yards. Like, that was what they believed they could do. And then totally kind of go away from it. I liked their passing concepts. It's like multiple things are true. I liked their plan of attack against the Eagles secondary that was dealing with some injuries and was susceptible. Like, I liked that plan. However, in certain moments, especially coming out in that third quarter where they only called three runs and one of them was like, oh shit, we got a first down on third and 26 because of penalty. Like, that was the white flag play. Like, and then all of a sudden it gets somewhere because there was a face mask on Kyren. Like, you know, and so two other runs called in those two drives in the third quarter. And I think that's a problem. You can go out there and say that is the best way to tell another team you're not afraid of them. And yes, it can be those crazy, cool passing concepts, but if something is off about the timing, if you're feeling like, okay, let's just reset, let's just settle here and dig in and really, like, make a statement, like, that's running the ball. That's what you do. And so I think that they're almost there. Like, I think they're, again, it's in spurts, it's in flashes. You can see that they're starting to really, I think the players all really believe in that run game. I think on the coaching side, you're starting to see a little bit more, okay, week after week, okay, I'm starting to, like, help, like, really be consistent with this identity. Didn't see it as much in that game, but I also don't think it is the reason why they lost. I think the self-inflicted mistakes, a couple of missed catches, missed throws, like the timing stuff, that would have significantly altered the game. This is the feeling of a team that's really close, right, Stu? Like, if they feel close to that breakthrough, limiting some of those self-inflicted errors, like you said, I think would make all the difference in the world for this team down the stretch.
Yeah, absolutely. As long as those get fixed, and, or, like I said earlier, at least minimized, the more they minimize them, the closer they get to, like, to your point, to reaching that potential.
Yeah. And we'll see how it goes. This is going to be fun. Another divisional opponent here coming up this week, in the Cardinals. I think if the Rams want to accomplish what they need, what they feel like they are able to accomplish this year, getting two out of three, one win at least in the early stretch here, two out of the three NFC West opponents, like, is pretty important, pretty significant. And it was a really tough, brutal opponent-wise opening stretch. So we'll kind of start to see more of what this group is made of. In the meantime, we are so happy to have been back with you guys today. Can't thank Stu enough for his time, being so gracious, being flexible. This morning was a little bit crazy for both of us. Certainly was crazy for Van Jefferson and his family. Stu is over at therams.com. He's on Twitter and Threads at Stu Jackson. You can go find all of his work, including, I think, not to spoil it, in a Kella Witherspoon story coming up that I am really excited to read. been an awesome addition to this Rams roster. Meanwhile, for the rest of you guys, check my stuff out over at theathletic.com. I'm not even going to tell you where to find me on social media because it's a toxic cesspool of existence. I'm doing fine. Everything's fine. And I hope you guys are really taking care of each other. Hope you guys are taking care of yourselves and catch you next week. Oh, and that you're staying caffeinated and hydrated. Oh my gosh. I would have so heard it, Stu, if I wouldn't have said that.
Gosh, we're in week 6, right?
Stu, I know. It's like, gosh, I'm starting over at week 1 all of a sudden. But Stu, thank you so much for being here today, dude.
Of course. Thanks for having me on. Appreciate it always. Appreciate it as always, Jordan. And see, I can't even speak anymore. So now you know it's perfect.
Yeah, we're going off the rails here today on this fine Tuesday. But you guys, again, stay caffeinated, stay hydrated, take care of yourselves and each other. And we'll catch you next time.
Hey, football fans, this is Diana Rossini from The Athletic. Get the top stories in pro football snapped directly to your inbox with our latest NFL newsletter, Scoop City. Jacob Robinson and I will bring you the daily scoop of top NFL articles, posts, and podcasts every Monday to Friday. Sign up for free now at theathletic.com/scoop.